Thanks for joining us at Cults to Consciousness. This storytelling podcast is meant to be for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for any medical advice. We may discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health a priority. Lastly, the opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the host.
At that time, I attributed my life being saved to Bikram himself. It was encouraged not to reach out to your family. Like, the yoga community was now your family. You know, this is going to be a very intense training. A lot of things are going to come up. As a student to a guru, you have to release everything over to your teacher. They will direct your life. They will tell you what to do. And it started with my studio owner, and then it went over to Bikram. Mm. First time that I went to Bikram's house with my boyfriend, studio owner, right-hand man to Bikram, was like, when we're here, you know, we take care of our guru. We will give him a massage. So we'd massage his feet or we'd massage his hands. And it was presented to me as an honor to be of service to my guru and his guru and his wife as well. It started to normalize, and my boyfriend's making it okay. And that this is what you do. This is what we do.
Yeah. Hey, my name is Shalise Ansola, and this is Cults to Consciousness, where we discuss leaving high-demand religions or organizations and finding healing and independence through awareness and true individual sovereignty. If you're only listening and you want to see our faces, you can go to our YouTube channel at Cults to Consciousness, where you can leave those words of encouragement for our guests who are coming on and sharing the deepest, scariest parts of their life to help us expose these cults, these different groups, and help others not fall into these cults and different groups. And just liking and sharing and subscribing, it really helps boost the algorithm and helps us share this message with more people. So thank you for that. Today's guest, we found her on our deep dive into the yoga cult world. Some of you may be familiar with the documentary on Netflix called Bikram, Yogi Guru Predator, which basically sums it all up. He's the one who kind of popularized hot yoga in the States. It took off. We'll talk more about that later. But she was one of his victims, someone who came forward and bravely stood up against him. And it was a really big deal. I was so excited to get in contact with her after watching her on the documentary. So thank you so much for joining us, Larissa Anderson.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, we were just talking off camera about how cults are still so rampant, and we're like, how are we still falling for these, because they're everywhere. And we were just talking about the documentary and how there's so many documentaries coming out and all of the overlap that's basically interchangeable with these cult leaders and their manipulation tactics. And so I think maybe we could start off by talking about how this group, how Bikram was essentially a cult leader, and how he was able to slowly but surely con people into following him. So from your perspective, who is Bikram and why was he so problematic?
Wow. Okay.
It's a huge question. I know.
I was like, to bring up like the documentaries about cults, you know, as I have gone into that myself, like doing more research on it and wanting to learn about cults and connect it to what I went through, and then realizing how similar these cults are and over a long period of time. And I thought like I would never fall into something like that, but I did. Who Bikram is, or that community, was very cult-like. I say that there's brainwashing, there's sleep deprivation, a lot of control within the teacher training, which is several weeks long, and you're isolated from like family and friends because you get more caught up in the yoga and the community that you're not listening to anybody outside of that community. I mean, your friends, family is the community itself. And I remember, like, that was something that came up during teacher training, that Bikram and his wife, like, talked about, like, this is now your family. It was ingrained over and over again. And I feel like I was groomed prior to going into teacher training from my teacher, who was a protege of Bikram himself. They were very close. And he was kind of the lead teacher for teacher training outside of Bikram at the time that I met my teacher, who became my boyfriend.
So Bikram, as far as I remember from the documentary, and please correct me if I get something wrong, okay, it seemed like he was the self-proclaimed master of yoga who was winning these yoga competitions in India, which at the end of the documentary, they said that didn't even exist at that time. So he made that part up. And he also claimed to have these postures that were something that he created, when in reality, they were completely plagiarized from somebody else's work. So it seemed like he was just putting on this persona and being like, okay, if I go to Los Angeles, I can just trick a bunch of people into thinking that I'm this master guru and they should follow me and I have the secrets and that type of thing. Would you find that that's a fair assessment of Bikram?
Absolutely. Yeah. He made so many claims, probably forgotten most of them. But he had so many claims of, like, you know, helping the president, healing the president. And, you know, when you actually research it, there's no truth to that. There's no facts. You can't find anything in the history books. You know, he said he won yoga competitions in India and that he came up with this sequence of postures. My understanding is that it's actually his guru who came up with the sequence of postures, and then he basically just took it and brought it here and popularized it. He made it what it is in America. It's kind of weird because sometimes I feel like in that regard, he did something so great because yoga wasn't popular. And he brought yoga here, and yoga was, like, on the map because of him. So it's like he did something great, but he's a terrible person.
Yeah.
He did a lot of not great, which is a tragedy.
Yeah, ultimately, he became very power hungry and a predator.
Yes.
I mean, it's in the name of the Netflix documentary. And this was multiple people that came out and said, yes, he did X, Y, and Z. And they felt basically preyed on. But also, you weren't really allowed to stand up to him or go against him. Something that you had mentioned off camera was that he would make an example out of people who tried to push back in any way. And so you had to just fall into line. So he really propped himself up as someone who was an authority, is someone who you can't really go up against. He did this thing in the documentary, and I don't know how you guys got all this footage. It was really interesting to watch, where he's yelling at people, calling them fat, really just putting them down. And everyone was kind of in agreement that, well, that's just how it works. If you want to be great, you have to be willing to be broken down and built back up in whatever image he wanted you to be. And that's so common among so many other cults. You kind of expect it, especially in these self-help kind of realm of things. Mm-hmm. Like when you have the NXIVM cult, for example, or MLMs, and they tell you it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, you have to shed your old self. So you expect to be suffering and you expect to feel bad about yourself, because the promise is they're going to build you up to be even greater. So I want to talk about your experience. Well, maybe let's wait on the teacher training, because I want to talk about how you felt like you were groomed into even going to teacher training initially.
I started practicing in, like, I think 1999, like late 1999. And I was coming out of some other traumatic events in my life. And I was heavily into, like, drugs and alcohol, because I had already experienced sexual trauma. And that was the way that I was dealing with it at the time. And I knew that I needed to stop doing what I was doing and change the direction of my life. Otherwise, it was not going to result in anything good. So I made that decision, and the place that I was working at, the owner of the restaurant, he was encouraging me to go take class. He trained people like in MMA, or not MMA, martial arts, and would have his students go through a 60-day yoga challenge before he would even work with them as a way of like proving their commitment and going through a challenge and having that commitment. And so he kept encouraging me to go because I think he saw that I was going through a hard time. So I ended up taking class at this local studio, and it was different than anything that I had experienced before. I was gymnastics when I was younger, worked out a lot, but this was very, very different. And I went back and I went back and I went back and I started going every single day. So I did the 60-day challenge, and I would say about 30-ish days and maybe 40, I think it was around like day 40 or something. The studio owner, he started paying attention to me. The other teachers were paying attention to me, noticing my commitment. And he said, "I think you should just keep going." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Just keep practicing every single day. You'll know when it's time for you to stop. But I think you should keep going." And I did. So I went, I think, 112 or 113 days in a row.
What? And this is the hot yoga, right?
Yeah, this is hot yoga.
How did you even do that with your body?
Well, and then I, would take two classes in a day.
What?
So the teachers were talking about like teacher training, and you're taking two classes a day during this 9-week training. So I was starting to prepare myself for the possibility of actually going to teacher training in Los Angeles with Bikram. And between the studio owner, who was the protege of Bikram, and he would travel to Los Angeles, and he was like the lead teacher outside of Bikram and his wife for teacher training. So I had a lot of respect for him. He was very charismatic himself, but he was like Bikram's right-hand man. And now he's paying attention to me and saying, like, "I'm noticing you. I see your commitment. I see you working hard." I would be like crying in class all the time because I was releasing energy. And my teacher was playing on that, I think, in the room. And not just with me, but with other people. Like, he was like wanting you to feel emotional. If you laugh or you cry or you feel angry, he would encourage that in class, that opening. And his teachers basically learned from him, and so they were doing the same sort of things. And that was how I started, and I would say that that would be the start of the grooming process, because they pick you out, and you feel special. And then it's, "Hey, we're gonna have a dinner with the teachers, and Bikram is coming up to visit. So we're gonna have you come with." And I wasn't a teacher at that time. It made me feel more special, I guess, handpicked to be potentially a teacher and to meet Bikram, who at that time I attributed my life being saved to Bikram himself.
Yeah, that makes sense because he's seemingly having a direct effect on your life and the outcomes. And also, anyone would feel special and good being picked out of a crowd and saying that you're doing a great job. And I think that's something that I really want to drive home here for people who are listening, because this is a very common thing within cults is they love bomb and they make you feel like you're amazing and you want to be part of that. I mean, that's just part of being human. We all want to be accepted. It's part of our DNA, right? Like we need to be in tribes to survive. And so when someone gives you that attention, of course, you're going to lap it up and be like, great, this is where I need to be. This is my home. This is these are the people who are willing to support me and they want to see me succeed. And maybe that's all that's true, because I'm not saying that everyone who's in a cult has bad intentions. Sometimes they genuinely do want you to succeed and be great. But then as you get further and further in, that's when things start to slip, and that's when the control happens. And that's when you start to realize that, or maybe you don't even realize it, that your whole life is now completely enmeshed in this group, and it's almost impossible to pull away from it, even if you're unhappy at that point. So you get chosen to go to this teacher training, and this is not a cheap thing. Mm-hmm. You're chosen, but you still have to pay quite a bit of money in order to become a teacher. So what's going through your mind at this point?
Well, I actually didn't go to teacher training right away. I was groomed and trained to be a teacher through my studio owner and his group of teachers. And because he was Bikram's right-hand man, if you will, he basically had the ability or the right to do that. So I learned to teach from him and started teaching at the studio because I didn't have the money initially to go to teacher training. In 2003 was when I ended up going, and I wasn't actually even sure if I was going to go at that point. But my studio owner called down and was like, you know, she needs to come down and do teacher training. And Bikram made an exception for me to go. Probably had like a week from finding out that I was going to go to pack up and drive down. I didn't even have a place to stay. Mm. Like, I drove from Washington to California. I had no idea where I was going to go, where I was going to stay. And I just went.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, this is what you're going to do. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. And it probably felt very synchronistic where you're just like, okay, I'm just going to go with the flow. This is what's meant to be. And these trainings, they're 9 weeks long, right?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. And I had already spent time with Bikram because the studio owner and I ended up having a relationship. And so I would travel to California with him, and I would stay at the house with Bikram and his wife and his children. So I was already intertwined, I guess, with the family at that point. The first time that we stayed, I think it was the first time that I went to Bikram's house with my boyfriend, the studio owner, we massaged Bikram. So my boyfriend, studio owner, right-hand man to Bikram, was like, when we're here, you know, we take care of our guru. We will give him a massage. So we'd massage his feet or we'd massage his hands. And it was presented to me as an honor to be of service to my guru and his guru and his wife as well. So it started to normalize very abnormal situations. And I felt uncomfortable and awkward about this interaction because this is a grown man. We're in the living room. My boyfriend is massaging one of his feet. I'm massaging the other or his hands. And my boyfriend's making it okay. And that this is what you do. This is what we do.
Yeah.
And Bikram wanted to look into my eyes, and I was very hesitant, and my boyfriend kind of nodded like, yes, it's okay. And Bikram like grabbed my face, and we're just a few feet away, and he was like looking into my eyes deeply, and basically said that we had a past life that we had shared together. He said something about like my soul or whatever, and that, you know, I was like destined for greatness type of thing. And I like pulled my face away because it was really uncomfortable for me that this was happening in front of my boyfriend, but he was like, no, it's okay. And those sort of things were happening more regularly. Like, I'd massage his wife, I'd brush her hair, I would brush Bikram's hair, I would, you know, help massage him with my boyfriend there, and then Bikram would want me to do it alone. And my boyfriend said, here's what he's going to talk about. He's going to say, he's going to make you a famous teacher. You're going to respond and tell him you don't want to become a famous teacher. You just want to be a good teacher. And that's why you're here. So I was being directed by my boyfriend of what was probably going to come up and how to respond to it. So that's why I say the grooming process was already had already started through the studio owner who became my boyfriend, who was close with Bikram. So I find that the two of them are very much alike. They just present themselves differently, but behind like their public persona, their dark personalities to me are the same, and they support each other.
Because you're trusting your boyfriend and also someone who's been close to Bikram. And Bikram, you just said you felt like he had saved your life in some way. And so you're giving over all of your trust and ignoring the red flags and just, letting yourself lean into it, even though it's uncomfortable. And that happens so frequently. And especially having someone who can kind of vouch for the weird behavior, someone who you trust, that happens all the time too. And you're just like, well, if they're okay with it, then what's my problem? Or
Correct.
they've already been down this road, so why should I push back? It doesn't really make sense when you love and trust someone who's guiding you down that same path. And oh, wow. So I wonder if they'd done this before with other women.
Yes, absolutely. I without a doubt, I didn't know it then, but I know that to be true now. And I wasn't the only one. And the other thing that I was going to bring up just about teacher training is that when I did land in Los Angeles and we had the introduction with the entire group, you say like who you are, where you're from, why you came to teacher training and like kind of what you hope to get out of it kind of thing. And it's hundreds of people. And Bikram's in the middle of the room, and when it was my turn, I went to stand up and I said, hi, my name is Larissa. I'm from Kirkland, Washington. And he interrupts and he said, you see her? He goes, I got her to come down to teacher training. She didn't listen to me at first, but I convinced her to come to teacher training. Like I changed her life. Like he like then I was like, oh my God, now I'm like the teacher's pet because I like and actually he didn't convince me to come down here. I made that choice, but there were different times that like he utilized me as a platform to say something to bolster himself up as being like more important. And then during teacher training, like he was seeking me out to brush his hair or give him a massage. So there was hundreds of people and he was like, where's Larissa? Where's Larissa? And I would be, can't say no. And, walk up and there's a picture of me combing his hair in front of the entire group, during teacher training. And I did similar for his wife. The message is that, I'm part of the family and I am special, type of thing. But it also made me feel really uncomfortable with my peers because I wasn't trying to be that person. I was very uncomfortable with that. But I was already trained and groomed that he is the guru. You take care of your guru. If he needs something, you're there to be of service. Be seen, don't be heard. You shut up, you listen, and you observe, and you learn from this master.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I wondered how you felt about that because on one hand, there's hundreds of people there who are idolizing this man and he is choosing you to single out. But on the other hand, it seemed like from the documentary that it could get really clicky and people could not be okay with each other, or there's this kind of social hierarchy within the teacher training that would seem really intense after those 9 weeks of people trying to make it through this, because I want to talk about the actual teacher training logistically as far as what you are physically made to do and this environment that is so charged with dehydration and not getting enough to eat and the sexual tension and kind of what's going on throughout this teacher training.
I remember them talking about the rules for teacher training that, you know, for the next 9 weeks, like this is your family. You know, you need to be completely focused on your time here. Like it was encouraged not to reach out to your family. Like the yoga community was now your family. You know, this is going to be a very intense training. A lot of things are going to come up. If you have issues, like you talk to the lead teachers or senior teachers. So basically it keeps everything within that community during that time. Not allowed to have sex, you know, no kissy kissy, no fucky fucky, no sex for any of us. So, you know, the isolation was already set up at the very beginning. Not allowed to have any relationships with other teacher trainees. Yet, you know, we heard about some of the senior teachers like fucking around with the students, meaning the teacher trainers. So like they could do it, but we couldn't do it. You know, that like the rumors were there. And during training, we get up in the morning, go to a yoga class, you know, have a little bit of time to eat. Then you'd be going back for lectures and then posture clinics. And most of the class, the 90-minute class that was taught, and I say 90-minute because it was more like 2 hours, they on purpose made it hotter than a normal studio would be because they are trying to break you down. You know, and it was presented like we're going to break through like all the things that are holding you back in life to make you a better person. You know, you don't need therapy. Like that's bullshit. Like, you know, psychologist bullshit. You don't need that. You need you. So we would, yeah, class in the morning, usually like 2 hours long, a little bit of time to eat, if at all. Then we'd go back into posture clinic or lecture, which means we're doing more physical work. If anybody fell asleep, the lead teachers would be walking around and like doing the wet willies in your ear. Weird shit like that to keep you awake. If you needed to go to the bathroom, you know, they would point people out. Like we had to stay in the room for all the lectures and posture clinics, and they would call people out. Like if they fell asleep or they went to the bathroom, for example, we'd have a little bit of time for lunch, then come back, lecture, posture clinic. Then we'd have another class, which was probably about 2 hours long. And then we have a quick dinner, come back, and then lectures with Bikram, which usually went until like midnight, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
What?
And then we would have to go home, and we're having to learn this dialogue, you know, so we have no time to memorize it or practice it, right? Go to sleep, totally pass out, wake up in the morning, gather all of our stuff, and then this happens over and over again. So you were never able to get like ahead of what you were physically going through, but it was sleep deprivation, nutrition was not there, you know, dehydration. And Bikram would just keep talking, and we were not allowed to leave until he decided that it was time for us to go. Once he was done, then we were allowed to go, but that was typically like very, very late at night, and that went on for 9 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
So people had like heat strokes, you know, dehydration, 911s call, you know, paramedics, you know, come over because of everything that we were going through physically. But it was like we're doing this on purpose so you come out of this stronger. If you can, you can go through Bikram teacher training, then nothing and nobody can touch you ever, period. You know, you are strong. You can survive anything. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to make you like untouchable by all other things in life, becoming a Bikram teacher.
It kind of sounds like military training, boot camp or something. If you can make it through and stay alive, then you can do anything. And it's just that reprogramming and that they kind of break down your identity and self and then build you into who they want you to be. Were ever or was everyone okay with this? Was everyone kind of on board?
No.
I was gonna say, did you notice people who were like, no, I'm not doing this?
That came up a lot, just popped into my head, like the lady who I ended up staying at her apartment. She was actually going through teacher training as well. And Bikram was pointing her out, calling her fat. And this is where this like mentality of I am Bikram, I'm going to make you bulletproof. He was targeting her and was like telling her she needs to stop eating and that she's fat. Afterwards, it was making her really emotional, and she's like, I don't understand, why does he think that's okay to do? And I told her, I was like, he's making you stronger. Like, you can't let those things affect you. And I said, he has called me fat, but I don't let it affect me. And he's called me skinny because I have gained weight and I have lost a significant amount of weight as well during the time of my own practice. And he's like, you look fat. And I was like, that sucks, but I was like, whatever, that's just Bikram. Like, that's just what he says. And you can't let that affect you because my teacher had already groomed me for these things to come up. And then here I was doing the same thing to this woman and not acknowledging that what she was going through and what her feelings are were completely valid. I wasn't supporting her through that. I was just like, no, this is, you have to ignore that. And you have to push through it. There was another student who was in my group that he is gay. And there was a lot of talk about that, like during teacher training. Bikram just picked at any various groups, it didn't matter who you are. And he was really offended by that and was going to leave. And he got super upset. And the director, the teacher, lead teacher at the time, was basically like told him not to leave. If he leaves now, he won't go through what he needs to go through. Like, I don't remember the exact words at this point in my life, but basically like talked him back into the room and talked him into staying. But what was being said by Bikram was really offensive. What you feel is not okay. You need to stay here. We are going to help you be a stronger person. That was again that message over and over and over again. This is just what Bikram does. This is how he challenges you. This is how you're going to become bulletproof. If you don't stick through this, you won't get to the other side. Like, this is your family. We're here to help you through this.
That also sounds like, I think it's called bull baiting in Scientology, where someone just yells at your face for a couple hours, all of these insults, and tries to get a rise out of you, and you pass if you don't respond. It seems kind of like something similar because also he's not just attacking someone's appearance, it's their core identity. He's gay, he's not gonna change. There was also a woman on the documentary who was black and he was extremely racist against her, and that's who she is. She can't change her ethnicity. And so I don't really see the point in what, like, he's just trying to make them stronger to insults because it's not, they're not gonna change. I could see maybe him being like, hey, let's get in shape. That pertains to yoga, but everything else, why is he attacking people like this?
It's definitely attacking people's identity. And that's not something that you can change. But like, you're being trained to compartmentalize a lot of stuff and accept really terrible things being said. And then everybody laughs it off. And that's that group mentality. And the people who would challenge him were picked on. You know, he would yell at them. They would be kicked out of teacher training. Like they were there one day and one day they're not there because they were questioning or challenging. And I think that that's one of the things that happened with this woman, was that she challenged what he said. And he just went off on her. And I've seen him do that at other times. And so you just fall in line. You don't want to piss him off. You don't want his attention on you in that way. So you keep your mouth shut, your eyes down, and tail between your legs, and you just do the class. And that's it. You keep your mouth shut. And so that was just what it was.
I know that he was singling you out, and some of these behaviors, they were uncomfortable. They weren't necessarily red flags. I mean, maybe they were. I guess I could get your opinion on that as far as what you felt like they were. But did you notice him singling anyone else out or doing things that everyone was kind of weirded out about?
I mean, I guess I would say like I've seen him single people out before, and that did make people uncomfortable. Like what comes to mind is like there was another teacher that was exploring like his own spirituality outside of yoga, and he was a very popular teacher. He had won a yoga competition, and so people respected him, looked up to him, and you know he was traveling the world and I guess had like a influence, you know, within this community. And Bikram did not like that. On his website, Bikram's website was like, do not have this teacher at your studio, do not have him teach for you. He is going against, you know, Bikram and Bikram yoga. Like, again, I don't remember exact words because as soon as that was put on the website, it was taken down within a couple days because, well, that's, you know, defamation of somebody's character and illegal. Like, but he did not like what he was doing and felt it was against him. And so made this public display and what we would refer to as blacklisting. You know, something else that is coming up for me as well as like for as far as teacher training, we would always talk about like drinking the Kool-Aid. That was a very common thing that was talked about within the Bikram community and teacher training specifically. It's like, you know, yes, like don't drink the Kool-Aid. We joke about it. So it's like a cult that's literally right in front of your face, and we're making fun of the fact that it's so culty, and yet here we are in it, which is it's so, again, it's like, wow, that's really crazy. And the things that he said was like absolutely crazy, but you know, that's just Bikram, and you believe what he has to say, and don't drink the Kool-Aid. But we all drink the Kool-Aid. Look at us, we're here, we're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Oh my
And we
gosh.
just make fun of it.
What were some of the claims that Bikram had that kind of set him apart and made him so people were okay with being defamed by him, or they would be honored to be in a room alone with him, even though he's so predatory? What are the things that he's claiming, these special powers that he has, to make people want to follow him?
Again, I think that he would use people as an example. Of how he has changed their lives. You know, he would talk about being a matchmaker, you know, how he'd get people together and married, you know, if they went against him, the bad things that would happen to them, you know, getting cancer. He used that with me before too. He is a guru and he comes from a lineage of gurus, and he can see your soul. He has like x-ray vision into your body. He knows how to fix you and he knows how to correct your life you as a student are like required to refrain from your own thinking and follow like what he says and what he recommends for you, because your life will be so much better for that. And he would just constantly like reaffirm that with different examples and people. If like somebody came back to Los Angeles and would like pop their head in for, future training, and he's like, do you see her? I changed her life. This is what I did. That's how I did it. And then the person's like, yep, he did. And so again, that message constantly is that he is the guru, he is the God, he is the one who knows better for you than you know for yourself. And I think that this actually probably started with my studio owner. As a student to a guru, is that you have to release everything over to your teacher and your guru. They will direct your life. They will tell you what to do. And it started with my studio owner, and then it went over to Bikram. So I had two of these men in my life that I gave my autonomy over to. And I think that that happened with a lot of people. And he would again continue to use examples of how, if you follow me and if you stay close with me, here's how your life will benefit. If you go against me, this is how your life, this is what's going to happen in your life, and it's not good.
Oh my gosh.
People have died, people have gotten cancer, they've lost everything, finances. He would pick anything, but he had examples that we thought were true that he would utilize.
Leading by the extreme fear. I mean, it's almost worse than these religious cults that are using your salvation, which who knows if that's even going to come to fruition after you die, but he's using tangible results in this life. You will suffer if you go against me. That's terrifying.
Yeah, and it happened. There's two things that are coming up for me right now. When I had first been introduced to Bikram, my studio owner and some teachers were invited to go up to Whistler. Bikram and his wife were there, and we were inside of a van, and Bikram and my teacher got in this huge fight. They were sitting in the front seat, and I'm not even sure like how it started, but because I was towards the back of the van at the time. But what I do remember about that is that it got heated really, really quick, and they were yelling at each other. And Bikram was talking about his students, and he said, "My students, your students, our students, they are more important than your own life." Basically, like they're entrusting their life into you. Like they are, he goes, "It's more important than my wife, more important than my children. Like you do everything for your students." And I don't even know like how that, again, how the argument came to be, but they were like both yelling at each other. The girl who's sitting next to me, she's a teacher, she starts crying. Roger Tree's just sitting there like, "This is what normally happens." And I wasn't used to seeing people fight in front of me. Like my parents never fought in front of the kids, and so it was very uncomfortable. But that was kind of like this introduction to like how scary he can be when he gets upset, and what he says is true, and you must accept it. Like he was arguing with my studio owner, like, "This is the truth. You must follow it. You are my student, and I am your guru, and I'm telling you this is what you need to do. And like, this is the most important thing." So later on, Bikram and my teacher had a falling out, and Bikram called me to come down to Los Angeles to have a conversation about it. And at that time, I had already ended my relationship with the studio owner. He was starting to do different styles of yoga, so that is not acceptable to Bikram. So they had this big falling out. He asked me to come down. I went to Los Angeles, and I went into his office, and he spent like several hours with me trying to convince me how bad of a person my studio owner was, who was also my now ex-boyfriend. And I kept telling him, like, I don't know what you're saying, if it's true or it's not true, but that's a relationship that you guys have, and it's not for me to get in the middle of it. He was telling me like how my ex-boyfriend was cancer. He's like gangrene. I have to cut him out of
Wow.
my life. That I need to choose Bikram. I need to choose Bikram yoga. That he's always been truthful to me. He loves me like part of the family. He will always take care of me. And that my ex-boyfriend will ruin me. And people that have gone against him, he would again use that example of they get cancer, they die, they committed suicide. There was nothing I can do, but if they don't follow their guru, this is what happens. And if you follow him, these things are going to happen to you.
Jeez.
And I said, I don't choose him. I'm not choosing you. I'm choosing yoga. Yoga is what's important to me. I
Yeah.
don't want to get involved in what's happening between the two of you. And then he started using these examples of like what my ex-boyfriend did with people that Bikram knew, and again, over and over again for hours. And I was like, I just choose yoga. And he's like, at the end of it, he goes, okay, well then you've made your choice. I knew that that meant that I was being blacklisted at that point. He walked me to the office door and kissed me on the cheek and said, you're no longer welcome here. So with me, he blacklisted me, but not with this huge, big display, because he also knows people and he knows how to be most effective with different personalities. So that was all he needed to do, because I knew what he meant. And I left, and I knew, I was like, I just got blacklisted. Like, I'm not going to be able to, work at different studios. I'm only going to be able to work at the one that I'm at, because if he finds out, he will start making phone calls.
Yeah.
Like, he's had me spy on other people. So I know he has people spying within the community. So that's kind of part of it too, is like, you are very much in this control group. And I had like met, somebody, I don't know, it was probably like early 2000s, who has nothing to do with the Bikram community, and I became friends with him. He goes, do you know that like all of your friends are Bikram teachers? You only do Bikram yoga, you only talk about yoga, and do you have anything outside of Bikram yoga? And I was like, yeah, I'm like, multifaceted person. And he goes, what else do you do? And I was like, I like nature shows. And that definitely stuck with me, because between my relationship with my studio owner and Bikram, I had cut off the relationship with my family. I cut off a relationship with any friends that were not, that had nothing to do with Bikram or Bikram yoga. Literally, my family and my friends and my life was all connected to Bikram yoga and that community. And anything outside of that, I ha had cut off, or wouldn't nurture those relationships, because they would question Bikram. They would question Bikram yoga. They would question why I don't have anything outside of that. And when they did, I'd cut them out of my life.
Yeah, so this is something that you were doing consciously, is getting people out, okay, because they were in the way of your goals and your hopes and dreams, because you did open up your own yoga studio, right? Was this before or after he said that you were no longer welcome?
This was after that event happened. I just kept my head down, kept working at the studio that I was at, and I ended up going to a silent meditation retreat. And when I went, this is where it makes me sound crazy. I started getting messages from Bikram while I was in this silent meditation retreat. It's like 10 days long, no talking. And I started hearing his voice and hearing him like speak to me and say that it was time for me to come back.
Whoa.
And it was probably about a year from that event where I was blacklisted. And when I came back from that meditation retreat, I told one of my good friends, who was also a yoga teacher, she said, "Well, I think you should reach out to him. Like, I think you should call him." And I'm like, "I haven't talked to him since he kicked me out of his office." I don't think he really wants to hear from me. He had the falling out with the previous studio owner, that they were very close and they hated each other. And I was like, "I don't know if I really want to do that." And she said, "He's your guru. Like, you have to call him. He sent you a message." So she was reaffirming he has these superpowers to be able to send messages to you telepathically that you need to listen to that and reach out. So initially, I wrote a letter to him and Rajshree, and that I was wrong for not choosing them and choosing my ex-boyfriend, which wasn't even the truth. But I knew in order to get back into his good graces, that's what I had to say or admit to. Never heard from him. And so she was like, "You just have to call him. You just have to call him." And I was like, "Okay, fine." So I call him. He answers the phone, and I said, he goes, "Who's this?" And I said, "It's Larissa." He goes, "Larissa who?" And I go, "Larissa from Seattle." So he knows people through like the association of Larissa through, Seattle. Like the first thing he says to me is, "What took you so long?" "What do you mean what took me so, like, you blacklisted me. You told me I was no longer welcome. I knew what that meant. So I left. That's it." But I also knew that I wanted to continue my career as a yoga Bikram yoga teacher. I wanted to train other people. I wanted to be part of teacher training. I wanted to be part of the competition. Like, I had a goal of being a senior yoga teacher, but I knew that I couldn't do that without his blessing. So I had to go back and say, "I'm sorry for not listening to you. You were right. I was wrong. Please forgive me and take me back." And he was like, "What took you so long?" He's like, "I'm in," I think he was like in Japan at the time, like, "Rajashree is at home." He said, "I want you to book a flight, come down, and don't worry about anything. It's like nothing ever happened. You're part of this family. Just come stay with us like the old times." And that's it. And I said, "Okay." So I booked a flight, and I went down to his house. And even like during visits, that sleep deprivation, practicing 2, 3 times a day. So I would take like a class in the morning, I would take advanced class in the afternoon, and I'd take another class in the evening.
I don't know how you are surviving. That's insane to me.
I don't know either. I don't know either. And then I'd come home, and then it was like Roger would make food, and I'd serve it to Bikram, and then Bikram would want a massage, and then he watches Bollywood movies, and so you're staying up until 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. The next day, same thing. Like, aren't you going to go to yoga? So like, you're even outside of teacher training, that was still what was going on with the grooming process, the brainwashing, the sleep deprivation, like all the typical things that a cult would do was just normal. That was just normal stuff. And it was during that trip that he raped me in his house with his wife and his kids upstairs.
Oh my gosh. We decided after the fact to split this up into two different episodes. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about everything that Bikram continued to put Larissa through, including attempting more assault and also essentially blacklisting her business that she started from the ground up. and part of the legalities, the trials, ways that he was continuing to play the victim while also trying to silence her simultaneously. So if you are interested, definitely check out that. And if you want to reach out to Larissa, you can find her on Instagram at Yogini Larissa. We'll put all of the links in the description below. If you'd like to support the podcast, liking, sharing, commenting is super helpful. We really need to get the word out about this Bikram. It's still going on. He just fled the country. He's in other places doing exactly the same thing. We really need to get the word out. So any way that you can do that to help would be amazing. If you'd like to support the podcast even further, you can become a patron at patreon.com/cultstoconsciousness. Our newest patrons are Gabby and Donald. Thank you so much for your support. You can also check out our merch at cultstoconsciousness.com under the merch tab. And if you want to go to Costa Rica, we have 5 spots left. It's not going to be a culty yoga retreat, I promise. It's going to be fun, a good time. We're just going to relax and get to know each other. So if you enjoy this episode, I'll link 2 more down here below. And keep your eye out for part 2. And until next time, follow your highest excitement, be conscious, and be well. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, it would mean a lot if you could like and subscribe on YouTube and leave a review or a comment to help with our visibility. You can also find me on social media at cults2consciousness or reach out by email at cults2consciousness@gmail.com.